We talk and we fight and we squabble and we argue all about politics because politics is in our blood. And also, our lives are affected by an ever increasingly ever growing federal government. But there are moments in time where the world and the universe are shrunk down to one or two events, and you'll never forget them. Like the moment Saturday night where President Donald Trump was almost assassinated, and rising, he made a fist, blood on his face, and he told that crowd in Pennsylvania, fight, fight, fight. But I got three words for you. Lest we forget. Lest we forget the vicious rhetoric against President Donald Trump that was spewed by Joe Biden and his corrupt media allies year after year after year from MSNBC, CNN, Disney, ABC, New York Times, etc. They invoked Hitler again and again. They called 75 million Americans fascists. And now they want to memory hole their hate. Don't let them. We won't. You're on the Chicago Way podcast with my brother, Nicholas Cass, a 30-year veteran of CIA, State Department, National Security Council, National Intelligence Council, and the White House. And with Jeff Carlin, future physics teacher, executive producer of WGN Radio, husband to the lovely Christine, and me, John Cass, longtime columnist, editor-in-chief of John Cass News, where you can always get a good cup of common sense. And where are you as President Trump gathers forces to be at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, as President Biden pretends to lower the vicious rhetoric that he's been spewing for years? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago Way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago Way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago Way.
The Chicago Way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand. Defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago Way.
All right, so Saturday night, I just put the final touches on my Sunday morning column, which was the Kamala Harris action figure gift for the Republican National Convention. And then I saw what all you saw. The president, Donald Trump, at a rally, an attempted assassination. He turns his head, the bullet just clips his ears, and he gets up after the Secret Service saves him. He gets up with all of them around him and all the people, thousands of people watching, and everybody on TV, and he has the presence of mind and, let's say, testicular fortitude to pump his fist and look at the crowd and show them that he was okay and said, fight, fight, fight. And right then, I knew he had what it takes. And many of you did too. And right now on the Chicago Way podcast, we're talking with, as always, Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio. And we're talking with my brother, Nick, 30-plus years at the CIA, the National Security Council, the State Department, the list grows long, and he's the smartest analyst I know. Nick and Jeff, welcome to the Chicago Way, gentlemen.
Thank you, guys. It's good to be with you again.
Yeah, so Nick. Always good to have you, Nick. Right. I gotta open with this, John. You know, we were planning on putting a different podcast up this week. We recorded other stuff, and you know, obviously stuff doesn't happen in a vacuum, so we had to adapt here. And Nick was lucky. We're lucky to get you on the horn here. But when John, you called me and you said, "Hey, we gotta figure out what we're gonna do here. Are you guys okay? Are you and Christine all right?" You know, that was your first instinct to see how we were doing. And what did I say to you, John? I'm a millennial. I'm used to this by now. You know, this has been our life story, is just, you know, one hop, skip, and a jump to another weird, which should have been a historically, you know, come together moment, is now just insane to me. And Nick, I got to ask you out of the gate here. I mean, in an attempt like this on a present, ex-president, maybe future president, what is your guys' first move on something like someone in the intel? What are they doing? I mean, it's all hands on deck. I assume everyone's off on vacations, being recalled.
Well, I think everybody, you know, throughout the world, whether you're here or at home, whether you're in the media or in the government of a foreign country or in the United States, you're all looking to try to figure out what happened, how did this come against the backdrop of what reality, and what are the likely implications? And this event, this attempted assassination, comes at a very, very important moment for two reasons. One, because we've had this long-standing coup d'etat process against President Trump, which John wrote about in his Friday column, beginning before Trump took office, the effort to sort of marshal all the forces of the investigatory and prosecutorial machinery in the United States. Right.
By the book.
So you had that. You had Biden as part of that. You had Biden, when he became president, promoting the mop-up phase of that coup, which is the trials to keep President Trump in jail for life and to keep him from coming back and voting. And so you have that at the very same moment that you have now, in the wake of the or at the moment of the debate, and since, you see this button being pushed to get rid of Biden because he is incompetent, largely incompetent, and unable to endure the rigors of office. And that's pretty clear. And that coup is being led by the guy who led the other coup, President Obama. So you have these two processes going on, and you have Biden fighting off an Obama coup, trying to promote the anti-Trump coup process, but now being confronted with this horrific violence in which he has to take a more presidential tone. And so he's trying to get past that violence as quickly as possible. But the problem is that it's not that simple. The Democrats have been running on this for many, many years now. And as John, as you said in your tweet the other day, people are going to be trying to maneuver to make hay out of this, obviously, in a variety of different ways. Mm-hmm. But it's not so easy to stop that process. And we've already had J.D. Vance saying that the rhetoric of Biden and the Democrats contributed directly to this. And so I was trying to think about what the, you know, really good example of that. And I came across your column from 2022 that about that infamous speech that Biden delivered against the red backdrop when he was calling Trump and his supporters semi-fascists and a clear and present danger to the state. So,
well, wait a minute. Hold on.
Go ahead.
When you portray someone as Hitler, as semi-fascist, and not only President Trump, but 75 million followers.
Right.
Jeff Carlin and Nick, I ask you, when you portray them that way, aren't you morally obligated to do everything you can to stop them?
Well, that's the question.
Can you do anything? Like Hitler was a baby, but I still strangled him. You know,
Hitler was an artist. Yeah, I know. We've talked about this before, and this is the tomahawks. This is the rhetoric. This is the, you know, let's take the high road. Remember that Michelle Obama speech at the
in
2016. You know, they go low, we go high, and that never. You know, that was just.
I will
tongue in cheek, right?
I mean, let me read you a quote from Biden's blood red Lenny Riefenstahl speech against the wall. Like, that's the wall where he would put us 16 feet and then call the the guards to shoot us. Listen, quote, MAGA Republicans do not respect the Constitution, Biden said, according to his own White House press office, the press statement. They do not believe in the rule of law. They do not recognize the will of the people. They refuse to accept the results of free elections, and they're working right now as I speak in state after state to give power to decide elections in America to partisans and cronies, empowering election deniers to undermine democracy itself. Was it all paranoid and grotesque? Yes. But that's President Biden. And now, gentlemen, now they're asking, let's calm down. Let's cut the rhetoric. Do you feel like doing that, Nick and Jeff?
Well, I mean, I think that that's going to be not a, a viable response here. I mean, I know President Trump has publicly talked about unity, and that's very, very important.
And Melania.
Key.
As we record,
it's very key.
Yeah.
But you can't have unity based on sweeping crimes under the rug. Mm-hmm. Or sweeping, you know, the past rhetoric under the rug. You have to account for that. What Biden said in that speech was clearly projection. I mean, yes. If you look at, it's like he was looking in a mirror at all his followers and since 2016, right. And his meetings in the Oval, and you know, obviously saying, you know, projecting literally onto Trump all the things that they were doing. There has to be an accounting for that. There absolutely has to be. As a political matter, it's going to be very, very tough because it's not just Biden. It's Pelosi said the same thing. And, you know, she's actually withdrawing from Biden. There are many, many Democrats in the Obama camp, most of them, who are basically of the same point of view. This is not something that can be avoided or eliminated simply by eliminating Biden. The problem is deeper.
Right.
And so but there's all sorts of wrecks. The record, it's not just John Cass right. saying this on the
exactly.
podcast.
Yeah.
There's Joy Reid on video. There's all these people on video screaming.
The influencers. Hey,
you know, there's Kathy Lee. What's her name? Kathy Lee Gifford, whatever her name is.
Whatever her name is, yeah.
Holding the comedian holding Trump's effigy, Trump's
Griffin.
Bloody Kathy severed
Griffin.
Head. Right.
Kathy
Griffin, right? Yeah.
Griffin, sorry.
There's the case of number of Democratic congressmen who petitioned to have Trump's Secret Service
revoked, which is so stupid.
You know, there's all of this sort of thing. There's a media that's still trying to both say there's both sideism here.
Right.
And if that's not confronted, if that's not clarified, it's going to be very, very hard to unify going forward. You can't sweep this stuff up.
You know, and I agree, like, there, you know, a recompense has to happen. There has to be someone has to, you know, say, like, this is bad. These people have to be shunned and removed. And if not, you know, if there's something crazy, there's a conspiracy to get this guy on a roof to shoot the president. Obviously, that's a legal thing, all that aside. But I think in my take on this, you know, what you're saying is, you know, Trump is being unifying. The Trump camp is trying to be unifying in a sense. And if they lean into that and he keeps into that, it's not going to matter what the Democrats do. It's over for them. I mean, the Democratic Party, as we know it, is kaput, is over. Just as the, you know, the Republican Party that we knew of 10 years ago is gone. Those things are now going to be relics, and whatever's going to be replaced is either going to be more far left or it's going to be fractured into multiple pieces. And I think that's the recompense that the Democrats are going to face here is that it's, you know, their power is all gone. They're, none of them. I mean, the Pelosi's of the world, no one's going to listen to them. People I know who are staunch long-term progressives and Democrats are just like, this is like, I can't take this anymore. Like, this has gone too far and we've got to find our way again as a country because we're better than this. And I think we've talked in the past about how we need something to try to draw that out. And I don't know what that's going to be. I think this is the time. I mean, if President Trump wants to cement his legacy as someone who is completely reversed the course of the country for the better, if that's what his goal is, if he sees it as a unifier, he's got it. He's got Mount Rushmore locked up. I mean, he's going to be one of the greatest presidents of this century because of that. If he does that, if he goes the other way, I don't think it's going to be enough. And I think we head towards, you know, a civil war type situation where we're conflicted and torn at the core of what we believe is good and wrong. And then I think that Trump has all the cards now to do that and make himself probably in the pantheon of presidents top 10. I mean,
I think that's a very good point. I would just say that I think that there are two processes that have to happen in tandem to get there.
Yes.
One of which would be, of course, to unify the country. And I think the messaging coming from the president right now has been spot on.
Yeah.
But if there is no effort to clarify what the problem was, and there are many, many people who still do not accept that problem. And as a matter of fact, there were great big donors just last week talking about how they wish that Trump had really been martyred, not figuratively by lawfare, but in real life. This is the kind of thing that has to be brought out and clarified. And then people can say, yes, we've gone too far.
Yeah.
So I think that the process that you're talking about is exactly what has to happen.
Yeah, taken to the square and pillory for their take. Yeah, I agree.
On the strategic level, that's the strategic level thing. But the tactical level, how do you get to that strategy? How do you fulfill that strategy is going to require a lot of house cleaning, a lot of mucking the stables.
That's what people don't want to deal with that, Nick.
Right.
They have let's say the elites like Rachel Maddow, like
Keith Olbermann.
Keith Olbermann, all these haters who have prominence and leverage, right?
Right.
And they're who are going to protect themselves, sending out their agents saying, oh, Trump is good. You want to unify the people because lower the rhetoric. Yeah. And meanwhile, I'll just say there's a newspaper in Mississippi called the Clarion Ledger. I just found it.
Yeah.
Here's a piece by Grant McLaughlin with the headline, Benny Thompson staffer's Facebook posts, quote, don't miss next time after Trump's shooting. Now, here's a post from a House member, right, from a staffer for Benny Thompson, the Democrat of Mississippi, and they said, don't miss next time. Well,
this is the this.
What
is
are you supposed to do? Throw this little turd under the bus and then protect Rachel Maddow and Joy Reid from their racism and hate?
This is why I think what the solution here is not to censor speech.
Right.
Under most, there's very, very few restrictions in America, and that's the way it should be. But to expose that kind of thinking and that talk and to put that front and center as a campaign issue that will be deliberated by the people and voted on in November, then creating a mandate for the kind of sweeping changes that have to happen,
right,
both in the bureaucracy, but presumably as a reflection of all of this, culturally as well, because newsrooms have to rethink what they're doing and their hiring practices and how they brought people on. So,
and how they, and maybe also they rethink what they did to certain people who didn't express their Marxist point of view and tried to destroy their careers and give them all sorts of stress that gave them a heart attack and a stroke.
Well, I don't think that bus is leaving the station, John. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, probably not.
But you know, you're right though. I mean, and it's kind of amazing that, you know, we're here, obviously, where we are. And this is one of the reasons why we need to, you know, we need to elect adults and we need to support people who are not lying to us and, you know, who tell the whole truth, not this half truth kind of thing. And to get to the point where, you know, there's going to be another side of this, it's interesting to see. And Nick, I'm curious about this. How do you see this, you know, how do we see our enemies using this against us? Because if Trump's going to run, you know, if Trump just runs, he doesn't have to worry about winning, right? Everything he does from here on out is going to be down ticket benefit to, where you said, root out those people who put forth violence or who have, you know, dallied and been, you know, fake and lying to people and causing us to get to this point. But how do you see all that reflected in the international waters? Because Yeah. Our country needs a win here. We internationally, we haven't been on the upside of a lot of stuff lately.
Well, I think that first of all, I don't think we can count on the process to be as smooth as that. And I don't think it's necessarily that there's no question that Trump will win. Remember, we're still talking about swing states and people's agendas in those swing states, which will have enormous impact on where these few thousand votes will go. So I think that's still the game right now. That's still something that we have to pay attention to. Again, I think the danger is that, forgive me, I'm being distracted here. But I think that internationally, obviously, people are looking at this as a moment of great turmoil in the United States. I would suspect that they probably do not think that this is going to be solved by one election or two. Sure. If you're the Europeans who were attending the NATO summit and were doing everything they could to boost up Joe Biden and their own political prospects in the face of growing skepticism in the NATO country populations about the course of action that the alliance has been taking with respect to operating out of area and aggressively rather than defensively in places like NATO.
Ukraine.
Well, yeah, yes. Right. Yes, because NATO, Ukraine was not a NATO country. It's not defending NATO territory. So a lot of that is going to be challenged. And I suspect that people, to the extent they're inclined to think that President Trump will be now has the upper hand, they're probably thinking then, okay, well, this was going to have enormous impact on the prospects for NATO going ahead. It's going to have enormous impacts on the United States' effort to pivot toward Asia, where it can confront in some capacity, hopefully judiciously, its premier peer competitor without being saddled too much with foolish decisions, strategic blunders in Ukraine and the Middle East. All of those things are probably going to be going through people's minds. I think a lot of Americans will be thinking of that as well, as they should be, because I think there has to be some major changes to our orientation in the world. And I suspect that regardless of who were to win this election, there will have to be a lot of focus tending to the problems at home, including this problem of trying to, quote unquote, unify people and reach a consensus on you know, sort of the cultural or zeitgeist issue that is going to have to take precedence. We cannot continue to build an empire and disregard these things as we have been without the expectation that it's going to do some great, great damage to us. So I think there's a couple of things. President Trump made a statement about unity, as did the First Lady, the former First Lady. Just a remarkable in tone. I think it was perfect. But remember also what he did on the stage after he was shot. He got up and he said, fight.
Yeah.
I mean, that photo alone is...
Right. I suspect this has only crystallized in the president's mind, former president's mind, what has to happen. This has to be a fight. Now we're fighting for the Republic. We're fighting to bring people together. We're fighting in all these sorts of things, but we have to clean house. We cannot allow this deep state, American Kemalist mentality, you know, for the people in spite of the people, to continue unchallenged. Because if it's unchallenged, it will continue, and it will arise again. And you have to be clear and forceful and thorough in your ability and your efforts to try to root out this kind of activity, the leaks, the this, the that, the other thing, the sort of ridiculous politicized court cases. I mean, this is doing untold damage to the system. This idea that somehow the Supreme Court is trying to put its finger on the scale and run the country. I mean, this kind of rhetoric is just so foolish. Yeah. So I think the first order of business is to expose that, vote on it, and then having won a mandate to go in and clean the house. It has to be happening. And this is all, I think these are two processes that have to go together. And so it's not one or the other. It's not unity versus cracking down. Because you're not just cracking down for the sake of it against your opponents.
Right.
There are a lot of people in the Democratic Party who can be persuaded that this has gone too far. There are a lot of guys in the donor class who are not. And that's just the reality of it. So that's going to be a big, big problem going forward, but we'll have to see how that's addressed.
You are listening to the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus, and Jeff Carlin and me, John Cass, and our guest, the wisest man I know, the wisest analyst I know, 30 years at CIA, 30 plus years CIA, the White House, National Security Council, State Department, and National Intelligence Council, and other things that I guess I can't mention or you'd have to kill me. My brother, Nicholas, he cuts through the fog. And I think you're right, Nick. This has to be, we have to, you're talking to your neighbors or your friends and you're hearing these politicians talk about lower the rhetoric, lower. But you have to be a surgeon, everyone. If you love this country, if you love your republic, you have to be a surgeon and cut out, go to the root, and root and stem. I don't know. Is that too drastic, Jeff?
Now remember the... Oh, sorry. I mean,
Go, Nick. Yeah.
I was going to say, you know, we talked about Monty Python and the meaning of life before the Ukraine war.
Right.
Mr. Creosote, yeah. As NATO exploding and how that was going to be the big damage. And, of course, the foolishness of this establishment, the adults in the room, have led us to precisely the dilemma, precisely the situation that a wise person would have wanted to avoid. Now, another Monty Python thing comes to mind in this respect, which is in from Holy Grail, the swamp lord, when Lancelot breaks in and he starts to slay all these people. And then the swamp lord says, well, let's not bicker and argue about who killed who, right? This is a happy occasion. You have to understand what the mess was all about. You cannot avoid it. If you try to paper over it, you might paper over it publicly, but if you don't really address it at a fundamental level, we're going to be encouraging the perpetuation of precisely this kind of unaccountable deep state activity, unmoored from any kind of reference to political the political wills of the people. You know, because again, the politicians here are just the servants of this zeitgeist, of the zenith. They're just the expressions of the political expression. I'm sure Biden thought he was a member of the deep state or working well with the deep state and driving it. And oh, look, you know, all of a sudden Obama is trying to stick a knife in him, you know, using the same sort of things. And then we talked about, you talked about in your column, John, and we talked about this before, guys, on the podcast, you know, we should be looking at the DOJ, who's got the guys that they can activate against their enemy, right? So all of that's going on. And I think that the only way to stop that is to bring it out, expose it, vote on it, and then say, you have the mandate to go do what you need to do and do it. Now, it's not going to be easy, but
That's the thing. I think he's going to run away with this thing. I'm pretty centrist. I'm pretty Inshallah. Reasonable. Yeah. And I think, you know, what was that?
Inshallah. God willing.
For sure. But he's going to have a mandate after this. It's going to be a landslide. I mean, there's just.
Is there going to be a red wave, Jeff? Remember the red wave? I never will forget it.
Wow. That's everyone always tries to play that game, the red wave, whatever. But that's not the point. The point is he's the one who's going to have. It's not going to be close. You know, those who are questioning Biden, there's no way they cannot, you know, go for him now because it's the standard. You know, we talked about the idea of like, when does it get too far? What's the thing that pushes the regular average American? Because I think at the end of the day, most Americans, you know, the center of our country, which is the bulk of us, and I'm talking left, right, center, the bulk of us see this as we are the point we didn't want to get to. We all kind of talked about in hushed tones, you know, we don't want this to happen. This is, you know, with our friends and all, I hope this, you know, this is stuff. Those people are crazy online. The internet's on fire, but it hasn't spilled out into real life yet. And even
the bullet spilled out, right? And killed somebody.
Well, that's my point. We've hit that point. And so now to anybody who can refute the need to be, you know, to not be that, to move away from the edge of violence and war and hatred towards each other. Anybody who doesn't see that we need to do that, this is, you know, patently un-American. I think exposing him as such is going to be a cakewalk because the tide is turned, not to use your red wave, but in Trump's favor because of that photo, because of the situation, because of these statements. I mean, that photo is just so powerful.
It's a t-shirt.
It's more than a t-shirt. I mean, John, it's the flag over Iwo Jima. It's the first Annabon. Yeah. I mean, it's all that stuff.
And you know what else it is? It's, I mean, on a tactical level, if you're thinking of it like as a sort of the mercenary, sort of political operative kind of guys, this is probably the first time now that President Trump has decisively taken a lead, probably obliterating Biden on the character issue.
Oh, yeah.
Because most of the focus has been about Trump being a felon and this and that and the other thing. And he's a rapist. And, you know, you had George Stephanopoulos and others, you know, lambasting congresswomen about things that the jury never found, but that were being promoted by partisan judges, all of these kinds of things. But now everybody saw unmistakably the real character of this guy.
Right. I mean, that was remarkable.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was remarkable. So, I mean, if you're thinking, okay, we're in a tough time. Well, who do you want to lead?
Right. Exactly.
Do you want a guy who manufactures stories about his prowess and corn pop and stuff?
He has his Jell-O cut up for him.
Yeah, because he's internally a weakling and a vicious kind of weakling.
He's a mean prick, and everyone knows it. Or
do you want a real certified badass?
Well, that's the thing. At the end of the day, you know, that was always the knock on Trump, and what they were saying, oh, Trump's raised the rhetoric, and he's off the rails, and he threatens things, he's dangerous and stuff. But if they're clearly you can wipe that away. It's an equal on both sides. They're both like that. You can't say one's better than the other, like you're saying, Nick, and that's scary
I can say one's better than the other.
One is an old
man, mean, a grifter, paid off by China and Ukraine and whatever that fat chick from Moscow who dropped the diamond on her on
but
his
this,
son.
John,
that's one guy. And the other guy got shot and then stood up and waved his fist to the crowd and said, fight.
Right. But you could have made before today, people were making that point on both sides, right? And now that doesn't matter because he's, like you said, he stood up. Bill, I don't like Bill Maher. You know, he's not one of my favorite people, but he put it like this before he opened his show that whatever followed the night after the shooting. And it was, you know, Biden couldn't make it through a debate and, you know, and a bullet couldn't take down Trump. That's it. That's all he needs. He puts that on a placard, on a bumper sticker, and then it runs away with it. I mean,
And now, I suspect that that's not lost on foreign leaders as well.
Right.
I mean, because there was a lot of talk just a couple of days ago about how NATO privately, I think Politico and others who are, of course, pro-Democrat and working on the, I would suspect, on the pro-Obama faction of this situation, were trying to, you know, destroy the reputation of Biden, saying that the Europeans are so aghast at his performance in the NATO summit that they're starting to gravitate. They're starting to sing the song of Trump a little bit, trying to show, hey, you know, I always liked you best.
Right.
Now, that's probably, I would just say that I will say that from my own sort of understanding of the situation, just leave it at that, that there is indeed that kind of sentiment out there. People are like, okay, we need to kind of address this. And I will also say that the fact that he got up, waved, that's not lost on international audiences. So
then
that's going to be a factor.
Put your CIA analyst hat on or your State Department analyst hat and tell us what you'll be looking for in terms of language changing among international media.
Yes.
And responses. What would a responsible analyst be looking for right now?
Well, if I were, I would put it this way. I was thinking about writing a column about this, about what if you were an analyst from Urbania or Slagonia or, you know, Ruritania or something, and you were looking at the United States, what would you see? I mean, I think that what you're going to have to see is more and more emphasis on agreement with the core American message in NATO, which is to if you want to defend yourself, you got to pay. The very fact that people are talking about Ukraine as like the existential struggle of NATO, but not one of these countries, very few of these countries have really, even if they've exceeded the 2% level, none of them are really adopting the kind of, you know, we are under, you know, existential threat. We have to completely reorient our economy to defense like the Americans did in World War II. You're not seeing anything like that, right? So people kind of understand that there's a level of bullshit going on here in this whole issue that is more about preserving the status quo, the sort of neoliberal status quo in Brussels and in other places in Europe than it is about actually defending against a Russian threat that is probably incapable of doing the things like they're that they're right. talking about, marching into the East.
Yeah,
they're
on.
Next. I mean, I hear Biden say this all the time, and it's just like so. Seriously. It's such a classic case of threat inflation, but it's actually quite harmful because it has blowback into the American political realm as well, and it creates fear and all of these sorts of things. So I suspect that what we're going to see is some greater respect paid to the idea that Europe needs to be more in charge of its own activities, working with the United States. I think that that is going to be something that whether even if Trump were to lose, that the next administration would probably do. I also suspect that if Trump were to lose, regardless of who comes into power after the election, that there's going to be moved towards some sort of closure on Ukraine, because as people don't understand, perhaps the Ukrainian army has been getting the shit kicked out of it in ways that make the rope-a-dope strategy of Muhammad Ali against, I'd say it's more like, when I think of a metaphor, I think of Roberto Duran backing into the ropes against Carlos Palomino and just like killing him, right?
Right.
Beating him senseless inside against the ropes. While everyone looks from the outside, if you're in the 20th row, you're like, oh yeah, it looks like Palomino's advancing against the ropes. He's got him on the run. You know, that's the same kind of bull that we saw. So I suspect that there's going to be some sort of, after the election, people will start to, in Washington, regardless of which side they're on, will start to think about, okay, we got to get out of this mess. We're also going to probably have to do something in the Middle East, because we can't continue to sustain the commitments that we have there for no overriding national security reason, like the ones in Syria with our support for the terrorist PKK and all of these things. I suspect that that'll have to come under some new scrutiny. Although some of these pet projects will continue under a Biden administration, I suspect that under a Trump administration, it would be there will have to be some really serious rethinking about all of this kind of stuff. And I think that the fact that now it looks to the world that Trump is likely to be, I would think that they would share your view, because they're actually quite sophisticated in their analysis of American politics, unlike us looking at them. they understand what these dynamics are, even at the level of the Uber driver, from the most sophisticated diplomat I know to the Uber driver. These guys are like, they get it. So there are going to be, I think, a lot of expectation of some sort of change and the ability to adapt to these new realities. And, so we'll take it from there. If the swing states go the way they may now. So we'll have to see.
Well, I'm thinking in terms of Syria and the PKK and the Democrat and I guess, what is it? The Endless War Party support. Yeah. That has to change. And
we also have to change. We will also probably wind up scaling back some of our ludicrous ideological commitments to Manhattan style liberalism being foisted on of countries abroad. We're going to stop. We're going to have to stop doing that. And it's
the wait a minute. Are you telling me that you're going to you expect the CIA, the State Department, to stop demanding that Hungary fly the rainbow flag?
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine a situation in which a new administration comes in and says, we're going to focus on more realistic aspects of foreign policy. We're not going to have these aspirational, ideological, Acela corridor pet projects, and we're going to focus on what's in the real interest of the United States. I think out of the two candidates in particular, there's no question that President Trump is the much more realistic guy. And I think that's going to be the focus. So a lot of these things probably will not be emphasized as much. It doesn't mean that he's going to say, oh, no, we don't care about, people who are homosexual and having their rights overseas. Obviously, everybody should have human rights, and there's no question about that. And I think that there's a strong American commitment to that, regardless of your orientation or whatever. I don't think that's going to change. But what is going to change, I suspect, is the constant effort, bureaucratically and otherwise, to inculcate a certain Acela corridor understanding of these issues in countries like in Eastern Europe, Orthodox countries, and elsewhere, particularly because, unfortunately, when a lot of these things also come as a reflection of temporal and secular power, whether we're promoting our secular religion and whether that has a prospect of success or not in a non-fertile environment depends in part about the local perception of American power, just as it did 1,000 years ago when the Russians became Orthodox as a result of the Byzantine power in the world, right? I mean, these things cannot be dismissed. I mean, secular temporal power does have an effect on whether or not you can promulgate an ideology that may not be perfectly well understood, but will be adopted because people see the successful people adopting it. I suspect that that's going to change because in the aftermath of the Ukraine war or the situation in the next few months, it's going to become apparent that the Russians have maintained their position at the very least, and that there's not going to be this steamrolling of the old way of thinking, etc. And that means that in some sense, Biden and his team, both in 2014 and today, will have exposed us to a strategic defeat at the hands of the sort of Russian powers in Ukraine. We didn't have to expose ourselves to that. We didn't have to go that way, but we did. Right. And now we're gonna get a bloody nose no matter what. And that's going to have implications, and it's going to maybe require us to be a little bit more judicious when we start telling people how to live their lives.
And maybe we'll realize that we're funding Putin's war against the Ukrainian people by cutting our production of oil, okay? And that's giving him a chance to boost production and make the money. And that's what it's about, man. So all this, what do you expect will happen to Obama's coup? Because this started as a discussion of days ago.
Yeah.
Where you had written and I had written the two coups of Barack Obama. One was against Trump, and you know the January 5th meeting in the White House with all the insiders, Brennan, Comey, all of them. And it was done by the book as what's her name? Who's the
Susan Rice?
Susan Rice, yes, Susan Rice.
Yeah.
And then the other coup has been when you see Axelrod demanding that Biden step down, when you see all these Democrats attacking Biden, they're not attacking him because the policy mistakes have destroyed his candidacy, like all these ridiculous policies, letting tens of millions of illegals into the country, for example, or the price of gas going high, not drilling to satisfy the socialists, all that. That's not what he's worried about. Obama's worried about the flubs that Biden did in his debate with Trump, where he came off like a mindless meat puppet.
Yeah.
And so that coup was underway just at the moment the president or former President Trump was shot.
Yeah.
So where's the coup going?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, even after that debate, both the House of Obama and House of Biden both agreed on the need to get rid of Donald Trump and put him in jail. So that was not an issue that separated them. The kind of rhetoric that they used to effectuate that was also common to both sides of that of the debate. Kind of reminded me a little bit of Harvey Weinstein when he was being charged with sexual abuse, that when he started talking about whatever it was, the Second Amendment and how, you know, he would be an advocate for gun control, so please leave him alone. You know, give me a break. We're both lawyers kind of thing.
Right.
So that was interesting because even as Obama was trying to stick the knife into Biden, Biden was still talking about, you know, Trump being a convict, et cetera, not wanting to let go of that issue and not giving it to Obama. Now, with the assassination attempt on President Trump, the whole notion of the harsh rhetoric has become front and center.
Right.
Biden is on record, as your excellent column from 2022 and other places and other columns that you've written and other people's columns shows that he is, I mean, it's hard for him to weasel away from this rhetoric, right. But it's also hard from the pro-Obama faction, including Nancy Pelosi and others, to get away. But what I expect would probably be that Obama will recede a little bit more. you know, he's silky, right? He's not going to be, he's going to try to walk away a little bit from this and see how this goes, because the condemnation of Biden helps Obama. It's like the national security issue. If you're looking at Biden's incompetence as a national security issue, which it is, okay, right. The idea of using extra legal or extra political or however you want to describe it, the coup to get rid of Biden, okay, is a very, very potent way to try to undercut him. But it's also very much in a something that's very beneficial to the deep state, because the deep state loves national security issues as a means to ride roughshod over all sort of democratic norms and practices. Right. So if you're Obama, that would be great. In the same way, if you can saddle Biden with this rhetoric and just focus, you know, have the focus on him, then getting rid of Biden could be kind of poised or shaped as, let's put that behind us. We acknowledge that this is a problem. Now we're going to move ahead with the pure. I suspect that'll be partly part of the thing. But I do also think that there's still going to be a question about who in DOJ or who in the, sort of investigatory apparatus breaks for who.
You want my prediction? Yeah, you want my prediction?
Yeah.
My prediction, and who came with it? Me or you? I think it was you. That that if that's going on, look for, you know, the HER report?
Yeah.
Jeff, you know that the Republicans are demanding that Garland turned over to them the video of that.
Or the audio, I think.
The audio and
video. Yeah, video. Yeah, they say the audio could be.
What? I look for some pro-Obama weasel in the Department of Justice to leak it out and totally decapitate.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's
true. Then it's like, my hands are clean. Obama, what like Claude Rains, like gambling in Casablanca?
Yeah. Shocked.
It was the Republicans, before the debate, the Republicans were demanding the release of those tapes as very, very important to help them do the full picture of the incapacitation of Biden. The DOJ obviously neglected, and I think part of the impeachment against Merrick Garland, I think, was in part based on that, if I'm not getting that completely wrong. So forgive me if I am. But the debate intervened, which means that on a tactical level, the Republicans don't really need to ask for those tapes anymore.
Right.
But it might be useful to a Democratic Party infighting to have one faction push that out, because there's clearly more needed to get Biden out. Right. And and if you do that, then, of course, you pave the way, you create a media environment that can still pave the way for, you know, a renewed, critical look by prosecutors and investigators at wrongdoing that, for whatever reason, was not completely examined or thoroughly examined, prior to the debate.
Sure. But I think that SCOTUS ruling, though, works in Biden's favor with the immunity stuff. So that might all be very moot anyway. But I think, and guys, we should wrap it up here, because I don't know. The news is going to change if we stay on together too much longer, and we won't be able to keep with it. But I want to, a friend of yours, John, and mine, and Nick, I'm sure you're a fan, Dan Prof tweeted something that talks really in depth. Everybody should read, just about the idea of Trump, and he's of Greek mythology now. But the final two lines here are fantastic. Dan tweets, not an assassin's bolt, felony convictions, a novel coronavirus, or a steady diet at McDonald's quarter pounders can fell him. He's not a philosopher or a king, but he has proven himself the man for this moment in America, if her preservation as a free society is of any interest to you.
Bravo.
And I think Dan nails it there, this is not about anything other than the preservation of the Republic anymore.
Right.
There are a precious few men with penetrating minds who could do this work that has to be done. Dan Proft is one. Victor Davis Hanson is another. The editors of The Federalists are also there, as well as our guest today, my brother Nicholas Cass, the wisest and smartest analyst I know. Thanks for being here, Nick.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here, Nick, on the Chicago Way podcast with Jeff Carlin, executive producer of WGN Radio, future physics teacher, husband, to Christine, the lovely Christine, and me, John Cass, husband, father, Greek Orthodox Christian, editor-in-chief of John Cass News. And the next time you hear my voice might be on a podcast that Jeff Carlin and I are putting together, and Nick was part of, my brother Nick was part of it, called the Palikari Project, and I'll have a column on that soon. And one more thing, a special shout out to my good friend, Nick Kumelis. Nick, I know you're listening, or I hope you're listening. Nick is in the Greek Greek American Rehabilitation Center in Wheeling. Just saw him the other day. And hats off to you, Nick. And we love you, man. Yes.
Love you, man.
Palikari. Yes. And also, all our prayers to the family of Corey Compratore, volunteer fire department member and victim of the sniper's bullets, and was killed at their rally for President Trump. So talk to you again next time on the Chicago Way podcast. Thanks for being here. And we love you all, and we love America.